seconds. Did you ever think you would make it? I feel I'm so close, I could taste sweet victory. I know this life meant for me. Yeah, why would you bet on Goliath when we got Bet David? Value taming, giving values contagious. This world of entrepreneurs, we get no value to haters. How they run, homie, look what I become. I'm the one.
Okay, so podcast episode number 321. Many of you have been waiting for this. This is a special one. I was with the governor yesterday. He came and spent a few minutes with the family, the kids. My son was like, I met the governor. It was great. We were at the Miami Dolphins game. They even won. But I hear this is your first live podcast for an hour that you're going to. So it's an honor to have you here. We're truly honored by this.
And we appreciate your setting up shop in Florida and doing all you're doing down here.
Yes, I told you earlier, we're going to make Fort Lauderdale the Hollywood of the Burbank of East Coast, but it's going to take us a minute. Anyways, let's get right into it. We got only 1 hour together. So first things first, for me, when I watch you very closely, I told you this yesterday, and I'm going to say it on camera as well, so it's very aligned with exactly the message I give to my son. When Dylan came and he shook hands with you, I said, Dylan, do you know who this man is? I said, this man is the governor. He's the reason why we moved to the great state of Florida. So you're the reason why we came here. And when we were in Texas, we had our insurance company. We built it. We moved it from L.A. To Addison, Texas. We had it there. We grew it to 45, 50,000 agents. We sold it a year and a half ago. 2.5 years ago, I said, babe, we got to move to a state. We're looking at everywhere here. We're looking at Greenwich. We're looking at New York. We're looking at Newport Beach. We're looking at staying in Dallas. We're looking at Nashville. We're looking at Tampa. And then finally, we made a decision to come out here for a couple different reasons. So, you know, I think sometimes if we go back 3 years ago, you got a lot of hate. People were criticizing you left and right. And I want to first start off by listing all your victories, what you've done. I think the world needs to know this. And I think this needs to be on a greatest hits constantly over and over again for people to know what you did and how hard it was for you to do what you did. So, one, I'm a guy that lived in California. I saw what Disneyland against Disney World, when everybody's like, well, let's see what's going to happen. This is the best case study of California against Florida. And then one day, Bob Iger comes in and says, I'm out. October of 2020, he left the Newsom camp. And the next day, they announced they're letting go of 28,000 employees. But you kept it open. So Disney World excels. The small businesses around are doing good. But California is getting destroyed. Okay. Everybody would say, you shut down Florida. April 1st, you announced it 2020. It was like 3 or 4 weeks. We were here and then free. It was a decision that a lot of people made.
Man, during that month, we had people flocking to Florida even then.
We were one of them.
We had golf courses going. We had recreation-protected churches, all those things. So, you know, we basically did a loose of the federal guidelines.
That's right.
But I was being criticized from the other side saying that this was that I wasn't doing enough on that regard. And then obviously we reversed course very quickly and then led the country
for the
next few years.
And by the way, to some of the Republicans that criticize you, to say he shut it down, that wasn't a shutdown. That was a test to see how things were reacting, to see what it was going to be like. And then you went back to business as usual based on what you saw. UFC 261, first full capacity event that took place April 24, 2021 in Jacksonville. Then you have LeBron. I don't know if he's ever
well,
seen.
Well, but the and that we actually did the first live sporting event. COVID came. Everyone freaked out. All the sports leagues shut down.
Right.
Dana White was trying to find a deserted island. So I called him. I said, Dana, just do it in Florida. And he's like, all right. He's like, where can I do it? I was like, wherever you want. And he wanted to make sure that the local mayor would also be supportive, because he's like, I know. I was like, look, I'll overrule him. He's like, no, I want to make sure everyone wants us there. So the Jacksonville mayor was a Republican, wanted him to do. So I think it was the first week of May 2020 when people, Governor California saying, don't even leave your house. We did a UFC. Now, we didn't have the stadium filled, but to do that was important because people were acting like we couldn't live life. Yes.
Yeah, we desperately
needed
it.
And so you had that. And so because we stood up for that, Dana's like, I'm always going to come back to Jacksonville.
Yep.
So he's come back to Jacksonville every year now.
And by the way, not only that, the UFC that they did in Miami was a record-breaking at the gate, even bigger than New York. Dana said in an interview, the post-fight, he said this was – felt like what L.A. was 10 years ago, even more than that. LeBron James won a championship because of you. These guys were the BLM guys, but they ran the playoffs here,
right,
which was full of controversy and contradictions there.
The NBA bubble,
right. But I can go on and on and on and talk about how parents feel comfortable here, what you've done with limiting the gender-affirming care, the E-Verify, veto on wasteful spending. I know the insurance crisis, I made a video about it today, how they're trying to kind of give you a hard time because you stand up to BlackRock and ESG. And then CBDC, which was one of the biggest ones that you guys rarely talk about. I'd love for you to talk more about that. Crypto community's now become crypto capital in the world is Miami. It's here. It's what you guys have done. And then I talked about that before. But I want to get into an issue right now that we're dealing with. I lived in Iran 10 years, okay? And whatever we turn on right now, we're seeing Israel, Palestine. A couple months ago was Ukraine, Russia. Now it's Israel, Palestine. Everyone's talking about it. It's a issue that's very disturbing. When we saw the video of people coming down and then what they did at that rave, the party, and then you're seeing the videos, the kidnap and all that stuff taking place. And then the numbers came out today, 8,500 on the Palestinian side, on what Israel has done. You got 1,500 on the Israeli side. It's a very complicated situation here because on one end, you're seeing how many billionaires are pulling money out of giving money to Harvard. I mean, that's where you went to, Yale. That's also where you went into. And Penn and all these different universities. What are you guys doing? How come you're not supporting this? You're supporting Palestine. You're quiet about it. And then on one end, I'm sitting there asking a question saying, how did Netanyahu not know, if you got the best secret intelligence in the world, Mossad, how did you not know this was going to take place? And the other question becomes, how Egypt, why are you not taking, you know, refugees to come to your country? What do you know about your neighbor that the rest of us don't know? These are two questions that we can both entertain. But this is the question I had for you. I feel the Democrats have owned the black vote for decades, that they feel like no matter what they do, they are always going to get the black vote. That's kind of how they treat them. So a lot of blacks are not happy about it. But guess what? Every year, 84 to 88% vote Democrat. I get a feeling that Netanyahu or Israel, this is a question a lot of people are thinking about, including myself, sees the Americans as the same way. America's got our back. We can do whatever we want to do, and they're going to always have our back. Matter of fact, even in a private conversation that he was having in 2001, I want to play this clip. He's having a conversation with a couple people. This has been reported on by WAPO in 2010. Al Jazeera, I want to say in 2001, and all over the place. If you don't mind paying attention to this video, and then I'll ask the question. Here's Netanyahu privately having a conversation in 01. Go ahead, Rob, and play it.
80%
of Americans support us. It's absurd. You know, we can kind of get what we want out of them. So this is my concern. I'm America first. I live here. My kids live here. My kids are in Florida because I feel the safest here. I don't mind my allies having good relationships with me. I'm okay with my allies. I have a problem with my allies using me as a card to abuse that get out of jail card. And then eventually this thing can turn around and lead into World War III, because World War I, 90 million people died. Two, 60 million people died. If the third one happens at that trajectory, it's 200 million people. Do you think Netanyahu is kind of using a get out of jail card to do what he wants to do and what he's been wanting to do with Palestine all these years?
Now, look, I don't think, I mean, I think you pointed out, how does they have the best security in the world, and yet this is a massive attack on their civilian population. So my sense is in Israel is that the public is very disenchanted with the government. I think they view it as having been a big problem that this happened. And so I think they're now in a situation where they have to say, okay, you know, you have this group in the Gaza Strip, which, by the way, is not occupied territory. Israel pulled out in 2006. They elected Hamas, and I think that's been a big mistake because most of the capital goes into the terrorist infrastructure. But I think they're in a situation where you can't live with that type of a threat right on your border. And so they have to deal with it. I don't think it's a question of America get out of jail free. I think, honestly, they're going to do what they're going to do. We've been a strong ally of theirs and vice versa over the years. But we've deployed troops all over the world. We've never deployed troops there. They've always fought with their own army. So I think the I don't think it's a question of manipulating America. I think it's you have the American people, by and large, have affinity for Israel. Largely, I think, more from in our Christian community than anything, just based on the history of the Judeo-Christian tradition and how it's informed this country. So I think it is unique in terms of the affinity that our country has for Israel because of the biblical history and people's adherence to the Judeo-Christian tradition.
Yeah, earlier today he said, this whole thing about ceasefire, I don't know if you saw that or not, where he's like, look, we're not going to ceasefire. Did America ceasefire with Pearl Harbor? Did America ceasefire with 9/11? Did America ceasefire? We're not going to either, right? Which, by the way, I understand his position. My concern isn't his position. My concern is this going so extreme where it backfires. You're seeing what happened at airports yesterday in Russia. I'm sure you saw that clip. It's all over the place. What do we do to prevent this from coming back in our soil? I'm a product of Iran. I lived in Iran 10 years, and I remember when Jimmy Carter's like, well, human rights, the Shah's got to get rid of these 3,000 political prisoners. He did. And then Al-Qaeda and, Osama bin Laden, all this thing came out of it. 10, 20, 30 years later, we got a 9/11 here. So are you worried the position he's taking could have some residual effects that come to America?
I don't think it's because of that. I am worried about terrorism in America largely because of what our own government has done to let people in illegally from all around the world. You've had people, almost 8 million have come in. We know people have come in from China, Russia, Middle East, all these places. 140 people on the terror watch list that our own government acknowledges.
Yep.
I mean, so you figure there's a lot more than that. And if you look at 9/11, part of the reason that happened was a failure of the immigration system, too. I mean, those people they weren't here on valid visas, or they had their visas expired, the hijackers. So my fear is just you have so many people that have flooded in. Some of them are part of the drug cartel. Some of them just want to work. Some of them are criminal aliens. And then some of them, I think, would be potential terrorists. And I think there's going to be a terrorist attack in this country that we're going to be able to trace back to the border. And so I look at it and say, okay, you got to protect your own people first and foremost. Territorial integrity of your country must be enforced. You can't just let the inmates run the asylum. And I think what we're seeing in some of these places in Europe, in some of these areas, is they had immigration policies that were bringing people in that didn't want to assimilate. My view is like nobody has a right to come to America, of course, illegally, but even legally. It's a privilege to be able to do that. The two things that have to be is you got to believe in this country's ideals, and you got to want to assimilate. I don't think it's helpful to bring in massive numbers of people that are going to try to bring foreign cultures in. And that's, I think, what's happened. There's no-go zones in France and in Britain and some of these places. That's not a recipe for success. So I think Europe's going to have a very difficult time with these tensions bubbling up. I think we have the ability to still be smart about what we're doing here in the United States and avoid some of what they've walked themselves into.
I just hope and pray that this thing doesn't get ugly. I know you got three kids. I got four. When you think from your kids' perspective, it's a little bit concerning when you're seeing this is not calming down. It's getting worse, and it's like at a bar. It's like, what'd you say? What'd you say? And everybody's like, did you see what he said? And it's just getting more and more and more heated. And we got to kind of figure out a way to bring it down. So Republican Party, let's transition to the next topic. There's a bit of a civil war going on in the Republican Party. There's three, I think, factions right now in the Republican Party. One is the anti-establishment faction. Okay, you can put the Matt Gaetz of the world and some of those guys in there, and the MAGA crowd and Trump and those guys in there. You can put the establishment crowd in there. Some of the guys that are the establishment guys that do well, some would call you anti-establishment at times. Some would call you establishment. You're like a hybrid. And then the third could be the Liz Cheney, the Lincoln Project, which the old Lincoln Project, which they had some momentum. They don't have the legs they do today, but there's a little bit of the Rhino community. For yourself, when you see this, Speaker of the House, McCarthy, Mike Johnson, stuff that we've not seen before, right? You see this division taking place. Do you see yourself as a unifier, or do you see yourself as a revolutionary?
Well, I think in some ways we're both. I mean, we would come to Washington and upend the order of way that they've done business. And I don't think we've had a president do that since Ronald Reagan when he came in 1980. I think that we need somebody that can come in across the board on all these issues, the bureaucracy, the border, the economy, and do this, implement these changes and do it for an 8-year period. I think that that's very important. But I also am somebody who, in my reelection as Florida governor, I got 97% of registered Republicans. That was a record. I mean, normally, if you get 90%, that's considered very, very good. We've got 97%.
You destroyed it. It wasn't even close.
Well, but the thing is we were able to bring people together,
right,
because we had a strong vision and we were delivering results for people. So I think what they're missing in Washington is so much of what the party's doing is theater. You know, you have guys out there that are putting on a show, and that's on all sides. I mean, ultimately, these Lincoln Project people, it's all about clicks for them and money and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, that ultimately is not what you're judged on in terms of being a leader. You're judged on, are you actually producing results? Are you moving the electorate in a way that is going to be better? In Florida, we produce results, but we also move the electorate. We took an electorate that was down the middle, 50-50, and we turned it into a 60-40 victory. Now we're considered a strong red state. That was not the case. In fact, you go back before I got elected governor, people were saying this was going to go blue. That's what people thought. They thought, and in fact, during COVID, you heard a lot of that because they're like, oh my gosh, Governor DeSantis has schools open. He's got all this stuff
right.
open. He's so unpopular, all this stuff. He's not going to be able to win reelection. There, people were saying that, and they were acting like this was an opportunity for Democrats. Turned out it was the opposite. So I think what you need to kind of you need to unify the Republicans, and you need to win enough independents. If you can't do that, you're just not going to win. And I'm the only one that really has a track record of doing that in Florida. We want independent voters by 18 percentage points. I mean, that's really what you need. But we didn't do it by contorting ourselves or trying to put our finger on the wind. We did what we believed. We told people the truth. We delivered results, and we were able to track people. There are people out there, they don't need to agree with you on everything. But if they see that you're telling them the truth, if they know you'll fight mm-hmm. for them when the chips are down, mm-hmm. they will support you. So we've got to do more of that, I think, as the Republicans. But look, I was conservative against the Republican establishment before Donald Trump ever ran, and I'm the same. You know, a lot of those people in D.C., you know, they don't want me to be the candidate. They opposed me. Everything we did in Florida, they've opposed. They opposed us having the state open. They opposed us having schools open. They opposed us fighting the vax mandates and stopping those. They opposed us beating Disney in the parents' rights fight. They've opposed us on getting critical race theory out of our schools. They opposed us on banning sanctuary cities. They opposed me when we sent illegal aliens to Martha's Vineyard. So that cabal of Republicans, it's basically a surrender caucus. They don't actually ever win victories. They're totally fine being the junior partners to the Democrats in the entrenched D.C. ruling class. That is totally unacceptable, and I fought those guys the whole time. I'm really the only guy that has just beat the left on issue after issue. I mean, we've beat them across the board. We've thoroughly pushed them out of taking over institutions. I mean, for example, higher education. I now have tenured professors in Florida every 5 years. They have to go undergo review. Mm. They can be let go. I put 7 conservatives on the trustee board at New College. They fired the president. They got rid of DEI. And now they have a classical liberal arts college like Hillsdale College, and they're bringing in new professors. They're cycling out some of the old professors. The media will say, oh, there's a brain drain leaving New College and this stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, well, wait a minute. If a professor of intersectional Marxism is leaving Florida, that is not a negative
for Florida.
We're okay with that. That's a good thing. What we've done in K-12 schools to protect parents' rights. And I think if you look at the larger reason why the country's in decline, I think a big part of it is the left. Anytime there's any vacuum, they get in. So they're in education, bureaucracy, now corporate America with things like ESG mm-hmm. and the whole DI agenda. So they corrupt these institutions, and then that ends up being weaponized against regular Americans. And so in Florida, we've beat them on the institutional level, and no other Republican can say that they've done that, because I understand that you can win a superficial policy fight, and you need to win those in the legislature or whatnot. But if the left controls every institution in our society, then ultimately, it's a losing proposition. So Florida, I think the reason we're the free state of Florida, yes, no income tax, yes, COVID freedom, all that important, but we have beat the left on the institutional level.
Listen, the one of the things that was most impressive with you is your dogfight. You fought. It wasn't like you backed down. You're not afraid. You got brass. You're willing to get up there and throw, you know, with anybody. And that's actually very attractive because we need that in America today, especially as a parent, people that want to create jobs. I want low regulation. You want that. But I want to go back to the question about unifying and revolutionary. So is the goal more for the party to win, policies to win, or for your personal ambitions of you being a president? Which one's more important?
The results, 100%.
Okay.
I'm a vessel for those results. You're judged by the results you do. It's not about holding the position. It's about what you do to make the country better and to make the people freer.
Fair enough. I want to play this clip for you. Then I got a question for you. This is a campaign video that most people haven't seen. This is from five years ago. Not this one. Go to the other one, the YouTube one right there. I want to play this clip, and I got a question for you at the end. Go for it.
Everyone knows my husband, Ron DeSantis, is endorsed by President Trump, but he's also an amazing dad. Ron loves playing with the kids.
Build the wall.
He reads stories.
Then Mr. Trump said, "You're fired." I love that part.
He's teaching Madison to talk.
Make America great again.
People say Ron's all Trump, but he is so much more.
Big league. So good.
I just thought you should know.
Ron DeSantis for governor.
So what happened? What happened between the two of you guys?
Well, nothing. No, well, first of all, that, you know, just understand, like, that's obviously a tongue-in-cheek. We were having fun
Of course.
It.
It's actually a funny video.
But here's the thing about it. When you're doing these campaigns, you want to get as much free media as possible. So I knew that that would cause the corporate media to light their hair on fire, and they did. And so they just kept playing it for me. So we didn't even have to really pay for the ad and everything, and we're just doing out. And so part of it is that ad gets out. What do the average voter see? They say, hey, this is a guy with this beautiful wife, young kids, everything like that. And that kind of helped us there. But, you know, I did more for him in his 2020 reelection than any other elected official. I raised him more money than any elected official. I got people in Florida to support him that were not happy with him because he didn't fire Fauci. He didn't do anything to stop the BLM riots in the summer of 2020, which we didn't tolerate in Florida. But you had cities burning down all across this country, and there was nothing done. So there was a lot of people that I got on his team, and I worked really hard, and we, you know, really delivered the victory because they— In October of 2020, I mean, his campaign was putting out stuff, oh, if he loses Florida, it's all because of the governor. Okay, well, you know, I brought in more Republicans here. So I was happy to do that. But the reality is, okay, what about going forward? What's the vehicle to make the country great again? And we need somebody who's going to be able to galvanize support and then attract the needed personnel to be able to deal with the administrative state. And then you need to actually be able to deliver results. I mean, one of the things on there that it's talking about is the wall. Remember, build the wall and have Mexico pay for it. What he now says on the campaign trail, I mean, honestly, honks me off because he says that if you believed what he said then, that you're somehow a loser. That's what he said the other day. And then before he says, oh, all these people saying that I'm gonna have Mexico pay. There's no legal mechanism in Mexico. Then you look at what he said in 2016. He was saying he was going to have Mexico pay. But here's the thing about execution. There actually is a way to have Mexico pay. The way you have Mexico pay is you impose fees on remittances that people send back to Mexico, who work here, Central America, anywhere in the world. You'd raise billions of dollars, and you would actually be able to construct the wall. So, and, you know, look, I'll tell you, I was disappointed, you know, as he's leaving office. Did he use that time to fire Fauci or to do any of that? No, he actually gave Fauci an award, a presidential commendation, on January 19th, 2021. And that was personal for me because Fauci, everything we did in Florida, Fauci attacked us on.
Andres, can we lower Governor's audio down like a notch? It just all of a sudden spiked. Please continue. Go for it.
So Fauci, he would do interviews with local TV affiliates in Florida bashing us. Oh, they're reckless.
Yep,
they shouldn't do that. He attacked us because I forced the schools to be open. I mean, I didn't really have the normal authority. I was using emergency powers and leveraging those with the funding to be able to do it. And that saved the bacon for a lot of kids. And it was like it was obvious after a few months that this Fauci was totally off his rocker, But he was doing real damage because anytime he'd go to the podium, his pronouncements were treated like, you know, like the Pope speaking ex cathedra to Catholics. And it was very
Black Swan, though, was a very tough season where, you know, even Obama, Biden, none of these guys had prepared for a pandemic. The only one that knew a pandemic was coming was a guy named Bill Gates. Everybody else is like,
well,
you know,
yeah, but here's the thing. You don't know. That's true. And I think there was a lot of uncertainty in March of 2020. The question is, what about November of 2020, December, January of 2020?
What should he have done?
He should have fired Fauci. He should have held these people accountable for being wrong, for lying to the public on all these different issues. The corrupt medical swamp in D.C. was a total disaster. I'll tell you what they also shouldn't have done. January of 2021, last few weeks in office, they're sending me missives from the White House task force saying, impose a mask mandate, close restaurants. And I'm just thinking to myself, and the media here would use it as fodder. They would say, DeSantis is not following the Trump White House task force. And I wasn't. That's true. But the media used that as a wedge. So I think that the whole Fauci, and here's the issue for the election going forward, is I'm the only one running that is talking about bringing accountability for what happened to this country during COVID. It's one thing to make a judgment call that's wrong, but it's another thing to ignore evidence. It's another thing to lie. When you tell people like CDC did that if you take an mRNA shot, you will not get COVID, and you still stand by that when it's obvious that people are getting it, when you're having the FDA approve an mRNA shot for six-month-old babies where there's no evidence that that's benefiting them, this is a swamp. This needs to be cleared out. I will do that. Here's a concern, I think, with a Trump nomination is RFK Jr. running as an independent. He would be the vessel for, and there's a lot of anti-Fauci, anti-lockdown voters who are upset about it.
Sure.
RFK would be the vessel in that scenario, whereas me as the candidate, I'm the vessel for that. Everyone knows I'm gonna hold people accountable. In fact, I'm gonna be in New Hampshire this week with Florida Surgeon General Joseph Latipo, Dr. Latipo.
Just that.
He's one of the few, and he's really the only person in a position of power that's actually.
And he got criticized a lot as well.
Well, that's what I told him when I hired him. I said, listen, what you're doing, you're gonna be the only one in position of power to actually take these, because that was one of the things early on with me when I was making these decisions. It wasn't just that it was unpopular. I could not get a doctor to stand with me and say I was right. And a lot of them would say it privately, but they were scared.
All their
to say
interviews
it
would get taken down on YouTube.
Yes. So, but Joe, I think, is an example of what you need to be able to deal with this medical storm.
So let's go. Okay, fair enough. Because you know, even Republicans will say, why is the president keep bragging about the fact that you know the warp speed, you know, the vaccine saved 100 million people's lives? I don't even want it to. Like some
That's
people.
False. That's okay. Totally false.
But the point when he's saying that, right? But let's set that part aside. When I show the clip of that video. And the left sits there and says, look at these guys. They can't even figure out who they want to be the Speaker of the House. They can't even figure out how to do this. Look at this McCarthy and look at this Mike Johnson. Look what they're going to kick him out as well. And if okay, it shows a not a unified party. But I want to go back with Trump. Would you have won your first term when he won by 34,000? Which I read your book the moment it came. The day your book came out, I read. I'm probably one of the first people that read your book. Would you have won governorship first time? If he doesn't endorse you and put those tweets about you, would you have won by 34,000?
Well, here's what I mean. The test of that is I won by 34,000 with his endorsement.
Okay.
4 years later, he attacked me 3 days before the election, and I won by 1.5 million votes. So he was at a rally in Pennsylvania. He started launching attacks against me. So not only did he not support me in my reelection,
but the first
he was
time,
hostile.
Would you have won the first time?
Look, yes, I would have.
You think you would have won the first time?
I would have won because here's the thing. If you look at the voters who opposed me the first time versus the voters who then supported me the next time, the number one reason they flipped from against to for in 4 years was Trump. Trump was a factor in 2018. It didn't matter what I did. They were going to vote against me. That was the reason. They viewed me as that.
Fair.
And it was a blue wave across the country. I mean, remember, Republicans got wiped out across the country. I mean, we got wiped out in the House. We lost a bunch of
governorships. There was no red wave is what you're talking about.
There was a blue wave.
There was a blue wave.
It was a snapback against Trump. And that's natural for a first year in the midterm. But here's the thing. You get into office, and the question is, you know, what do you do with it? And I've done more with it than anybody who's been in a similar situation. The policy success we've had, the leadership in crisis, and then moving the political pendulum in a direction that we've done is just, you cannot argue
I don't know if
with
I disagree
those
with,
results.
I don't know if I disagree with that. The only thing I think about is a guy helped you. There's a difference between being a mayor. Like, I'm sure when you see a mayor, you're like, dude, you're a mayor, right? But there's a difference between being a mayor or Congress or Senate or governor of Florida, California, New York, Texas. These are big states. You're running a country. You're not running a state if you look at the data.
13th largest economy in the world.
That's right. But the point is, that part, what do you say to the audience when they look at you and ask, okay, so governor, I love your policies. I'm very happy. I'd love, you know, for you to be a president. I think you have a lot of great qualities of being a president. You're a family guy. You're this, you're that. But what do you say to the faction that says, you know, but the guy gave you an opportunity to be a governor. How about show loyalty to that guy? What do you say to those people?
How's it showing loyalty when he attacks me 3 days before my reelection? I had never done anything to him. Even all the Fauci stuff, I kept that private.
That 3 days before, how much prior to that did you and him communicate? Were you guys regularly communicating or not really?
I don't really remember, but I mean, at that point, that was kind of a line in the sand. Like, okay, all right, that's what you're. I mean, like, and I have no problem. Like, politics, it is what it is. But like, we were trying to engineer a red wave around this country, and to not saddle up and be a team player in that situation to do it, that was wrong. Honestly, I mean, we set a record here for what we did, so it either didn't affect or was even helpful in hindsight. But that's just the reality. So you can go and do that to other candidates, and somehow that's not supposed to change anything. The reality is he did that because he cared more about himself than he did about the greater good. The greater good was clearly, I win re-election in Florida, we win super majorities, and we continue to implement the agenda. That's the greater good from a conservative perspective. There is no reason you should have been out there taking pot shots at me or anybody in Florida. And of course, he's trashed Florida repeatedly over the last year. He gets on social media. He said Cuomo did better in New York.
I've
than
heard
me.
All of that. And it's nonsense.
But that
doesn't make any sense.
But I wasn't a candidate when he was doing that.
Right.
He was doing that on his own because he was upset
I did well.
Yeah. So it's all about him.
Yeah.
So let me. He says Newsom did better. He said Cuomo did better. Now, his whole family moved to Florida under my governorship, but put that aside. He has used very left-wing media sources to say crazy things about Florida.
Yeah.
So that's what he's done. So what is that? He's not held accountable for anything? I mean, there's a strain of people that he can go out and say whatever he wants, and somehow that's fine, and then you say anything, then all of a sudden, no, that's not the way it works. You put your big boy pants on. You're held accountable for your conduct. He chose to make those statements, and that's fine, but those are false statements.
If you believe that you would have won 34,000 without those three tweets or without him endorsing you and him bringing you up, and he's like, look at him, he's feeling your shoulders. I remember that scene where he's like, look at this guy, he's like a strong guy. If you believe you would have won without him, fair. But to the voter that thinks that gave you the tipping point to win, different story. They're like, listen, you got to give this guy a little bit. He's the reason why you won the first time as governor.
Okay, anyways. So but here's the thing. Okay, so therefore, then what if you believe that? Therefore, if I don't think he's able to win the 2024 election, I'm supposed to not do what
you
I think
should
is right.
Run. No, you should run.
If I don't think he can drain the swamp, if I don't think he's going to be able to be in a position to do it, the country is more important. Endorsements here.
Did you
or there,
have a conversation before you ran? Did you have a conversation with him saying, "Hey, President, I'm thinking about running"? Did you have any conversation with him?
I have not talked to him since he started attacking me.
No. But let's just say you're having a thought, okay? So, for example, I'm like, okay, I'm thinking about starting my own business. Before I started my own insurance company, and I made a run to start my own insurance company, I just got married. I had a meeting with the people I respect, and I said,
No, because the reason why is I had a lot of people, really from the end of the 2020 election, I've had people telling me you should run or not. But my view was, look, I got more to do here. I had re-election. And then even after the re-election, that was kind of the thing where all these other candidates did poorly.
Yeah.
I showed the Republicans the way to win nationally, and people said, if we can do that, we're going to do very well in 24. However, even with that, I had my head down. I got all the stuff I promised in the campaign. I got done all of that in the legislative session. We were knocking out all kinds of issues that conservatives have been dreaming about for years. So we got that done. So that's just how I think. That was my frame of mind. You know, I said, if things happen for a reason, and either they'll happen or they're not. but I wasn't 2 years ago saying I'm going to do, because I had so much in front of me on my plate. I had to show political success, because it's one thing to take these positions. It's one thing to take leadership stands. And you don't do it for politics. And I'm sure it was stupid politically in the short term for me to do some of the stuff I've done. But you do need validation at some point to show that this is a sustainable model, Florida's model. And we showed that, and we were able to do it.
You 100%. So, you know, back then there was always the talk, should he run, should he not run? It's like, no, listen, when's the next time you're going to have a chance for you to have this great of a resume during the most unpredictable season we've had in the last 40 years, 50 years? And you proved yourself and you ran. You should have ran. That's not what I'm saying. My only thing is, was there that conversation to say, you were before me, you helped me with my first governorship, can I have a conversation? This is what I'm thinking. I'd like us to be unified when we go out to the public. That is the only conversation I'm having. Let me go to the next conversation, next topic here. Okay, so when I think about presidents, I think about two different types of presidents. I think about a president that's an alpha, and then I think about presidents that are flag carriers. Let me explain to both. Alpha to me is Lincoln was an alpha. Ulysses S. Grant is a flag carrier. He became a two-term after him. Reagan, alpha. Senior, flag carrier. Kennedy, alpha. If you go to, we got a list of them. We can go to Ike, alpha. Nixon, flag carrier. Great president. You take Watergate out. Nixon was one of the better presidents we had in the last 50 years. You go to Obama, alpha. Clinton, alpha. Bush, flag carrier to his father. Trump, alpha. Do you view yourself as an alpha candidate or a flag carrier candidate?
No, you're a leader, of course. I mean, you look at what we've done in Florida. We blazed a trail. I wasn't carrying anyone's flag. I was the one leading. I was calling the shots. I was getting out.
You think there's anything wrong with carrying a flag?
What's that?
You think there's anything wrong with carrying a flag? Someone's got to carry your flag and be your VP.
There's nothing wrong with it. But the question is, you know, if you look at Reagan, he set kind of the standard. So 41 was operating in his shadow to kind of carry on the legacy. But Reagan represented the break from the failure of the Carter to the present. Just like I represented kind of Florida going, we're going against the establishment. We're going against the COVID insanity. We're going against the gender insanity, that we're planting a flag. We're taking a stand, and then we're going to push forward. And so that's what we've done, and I think that's what we need in Washington. Everything's going in the wrong direction, so you need an abrupt shift where this bureaucracy is reconstitutionalized, where you're able to open up all the energy production, reverse Bidenomics, have good people that'll work for you, because you can make the best decisions in the world. You've got to have people that are going to implement that policy in a very hostile bureaucracy. And if you don't have that, then you're going to end up getting kneecapped. But that's going to represent a significant break from how this country has been governed for the last two or three decades. But we need it, because I think the direction that we're going is not sustainable. And this country will fail unless we get an American revival.
Let's talk about Newsom against you, the debate. I understand a year ago for you guys to debate, that made sense. I understand even 7 months ago. To choose to debate with him now is a little weird to me, because you're in the playoffs. He didn't make the playoffs. He's not even in the playoffs, right? The only thing I get when I see some like this is where you two may a year ago have thought neither Trump nor Biden's going to be there at the end. It's going to be the two of you. America wants a younger face. America wants a younger president. That's who we want as a candidate. So let's go ahead and do that. There is no winning for you debating Newsom.
No, there is. Look, yeah, yes. Here's the
reason
why.
I'd love to know why.
Because this whole business is, you got to get attention. You got to get on voters' minds. And for most of the past 6 months, it's been mostly focusing on everything that's happening legally with the former president. That has drowned out a lot of stuff. This is going to be something that's going to cut through. It's going to get a lot of attention. It's a good debate for the country. So that's one reason, because I want a forum to be able to articulate my message. It is not, though, a debate about California versus Florida, because that debate is over. People have voted with their feet. They've left California in record numbers. They've moved to Florida in record numbers. What it is a debate on is about the future of the country. So California represents the petri dish of American leftism. They're 5 years ahead of whatever Biden's people are cooking up in D.C. So if you want to know what America would look like, 2024 Biden or maybe a Newsom or a Harris, just look to California. California is a recipe to accelerate the decline of this country. Florida is a model to reverse the decline of the country and engineer a revival of the American spirit and a new birth of freedom. And finally, the reason to debate, he might be the candidate. I mean, I think that the Republican voters We need a candidate that's going to be able to take on all comers. I mean, we look at Biden, we say, yeah, he's over the hill, he's weak, and I think that's true. But they may go with Newsom. They may go with Harris. They may go with somebody else. Yeah. That could happen, and we just have to be prepared for that. But it isn't because I think that necessarily he's going to be the candidate. I think it's an important debate. I think it's an important opportunity for me to be able to express my record and my views in a way that's going to be largely unfiltered, because I think we're going to have a 90 minutes to 2 hours that we're going to do. And I'll bet you that may get more viewers than the last Fox debate did that we did at the Reagan Library.
I think this may get more viewers than the last debate with Fox. I mean, I hate to say that. I was there myself, and people were walking out of that debate. It wasn't the craziest debate to be at. Okay, you talk about attention. Are you the type of person, like I have people around me that love to say, hey, Pat, you got something between your teeth. These are the annoying people in your life, right? Hey, Pat, pull your zipper up. You know, hey, Pat, do this. Hey, pull one of your socks is lower than the other one. I'm sure your marketing team points out how they're trying to troll you in the marketplace. Okay, I'm sure they're doing that. Can you bring this one clip? I know you were on, what was it? Bill Maher, and Bill Maher talked about the boots. I've seen you walk with these boots. Go ahead and play this clip. This on TikTok went viral. It doesn't have a million views. It doesn't have, you know, 10 million views. This thing's got 1.2 million likes. And some people are wondering,
what are they? I don't even understand. So I haven't seen that.
They've not shown this to you. Okay, no. What they're trying to say with this is that in your boots, you have heels.
No. Those are just standard off the rack Lucchese.
How tall are you, Governor? How tall?
5'11.
5'11? Okay. Why don't you wear tennis shoes and dress shoes?
I do wear tennis shoes when I work out. Yeah, 100%.
You do. Yep. Okay, I got a gift for you. I'd love for you to wear. Okay, I shop at Ferragamo. Okay,
I don't accept gifts. I can't accept it.
I totally get it.
I'm sorry.
I'm gonna put it here, and Ferragamo can get a nice sponsorship. And then, okay, if you wear it, you fair. I know.
Here's the thing. I mean, I think with just how politics works is. Yogi Berra, when he was in the Yankees, they said, you know, Yogi, he doesn't look like a Yankee. You know, he doesn't do this.
Yeah.
And Yogi's basically like, okay, you know, if you say I'm ugly, that's fine. But, you know, you don't hit a baseball with your face. And so what we're doing is, you know, really, I think, doing the issues, the leadership, people that are poking at you for different things. That's fine. But ultimately, that is not, I think it's a sign of strength. I think if they could say he was
for
a horrible governor, he was this, he was that, then they would definitely do it. But they don't do that because I don't think that they have much there. We've been an exemplary leader. We've gotten things done. We would be somebody that would be obviously a really strong candidate. That's part of the reason the media attacks me and everything like that.
So I would say this to you. I think if your marketing team talks to you regularly, they either share with you, but you got such a busy schedule. I'm running night companies. Half the time, I don't even know what's going on. People tell me, did you see this? I'm like, I can't see everything. So I'm sure you're not seeing everything. But I'm a big fan of yours, okay? I'm not a fan of your marketing team. I'm just not. And I can say that comfortably. You can say I have one of the best marketing teams, no problem, because I think your book was a miss. I think there's a lot of opportunities that's been out there that was a miss. I was on a flight one time with Bill O'Reilly.
Why was it a miss?
I think your book could have done very well.
And it was the number one book in the country for 2 weeks.
Yes, not a long time, though. You're a guy that should be the leading candidate for president. You were the best governor during COVID, hands down. Nobody did it better than you. No one. You had a fight. You stood up to these bullies, to all these a-holes that were trying to manipulate the voters like me, and we were walking around as if we're weird, and you stood up for those people. And I loved it. I respected it. I went around defending you constantly, and I'm sitting there saying, why are we not telling this story? Why are we not going out there selling millions of copies of this book on what you did during COVID? So that, to me, was a missed opportunity. By the way, your marketing team can hate me. I've talked to most, just giving my opinion on that.
With the book, I didn't really have a marketing team. I mean, you know, you're doing it, and people sell it, or they don't sell it. I go on media and whatnot.
You didn't go around talking to a lot of people about your book, though. That was a great book.
We tried. I mean, yeah, but you know, don't forget, I was also in the midst of the legislative session. I had a lot on my plate, and we were doing a lot of stuff.
I get that. I just think that was a missed opportunity. By the way, if you haven't read the book, I highly recommend you go order the book. There's the book. Rob, put the link below to the book. Everybody, it ended up becoming a New York Times bestseller, but it wasn't really talked about enough. I highly recommend everybody to read this book. Okay, a couple other questions here before we wrap up with the last 16 minutes. By the way, the whole purpose of me showing you this is, you ever seen the movie 8 Mile? You ever
long
seen Eminem's
ago,
8 Mile?
Long time ago.
You ever seen the last part of 8 Mile when he's going, Eminem's going. Eminem was just at the fight with Ngannou and Fury, and it was a great fight. I actually didn't think Ngannou was going to do that good. He was on the podcast a couple months ago. I'm like, this guy crushed it. So impressive. But the way the movie ends, Eminem is on the stage, and this other guy who's punking him, who said stuff about his girl, who said stuff about Trailer, who sets this, all this stuff, he made fun of him. He's taller than him. He's got all this stuff that's going on. And he just got up and he says, look, man, here's what you're going to say about me. You're going to say this about me. You're going to say that about me. You're going to say this about me. You're going to say that about me. Even with that, this is who I am. If you like it, great. If you don't, that's not my problem. That's your problem. I feel like, you know, when I look at you, you remember the commercial in the 90s with, you know, Gatorade commercial. Sometimes I dream that he is me like Mike. I want to be, remember that whole commercial,
sure.
Right? Okay.
Great. Iconic commercial.
Yeah, so we all wanted to be like Mike, except it's tough to do when you're from Iran and your vertical leap is 15 inches. I was not like Mike. I was barely like Muhammad. I couldn't jump if I tried. Jumping wasn't my thing. I was just a fast guy. So for me, when I watch branding-wise, I'll say, who does your marketing team try to, you know, position you as? Is it, hey, let's look at the case study of John F. Kennedy and Jackie Kennedy? Because Casey, first of all, when we came that day to the mansion, holy moly, she's a rock star.
Yeah.
I mean, you know this. I don't need to tell you this. She's your wife. But she's a rock star. The way she spoke, the way she won us over, the way she was just, you know, very gentle, kind, loved her husband, protective, prime for first lady. She's got all of that, right? And then it's like, well, you know, is that the case? And do we position John, the governor as John F. Kennedy? You're not a playboy. You're not a guy that has that resume. That's not, you're a good guy. When I look at you, you come across as a great father. You're a great husband. That's your brand, right? So when you look at yourself and you're being aspirational, do you see yourself and say, you know, if I see myself as anybody, I see myself as this president. I see myself as that president. And if yes, who would that be?
Well, I don't think you point to just one, because I think that there are unique moments in time and different people have different things. I mean, I think if you look a number of presidents, I mean, most recently, of course, Ronald Reagan, I think the aspirational about what it means to be an American, he was able to articulate that way in something that was very, very powerful. I think if you look at some of our founders, including Washington and some of the others, you know, they really had the character, the idea of country above self. Washington could have been the king. He could have, when we won the revolution, he could have installed himself as a monarch, and he chose not to because he surrendered his sword, and then he went back to live on his farm in Virginia, and he eventually got called back to be the first president. But when he surrendered his sword, George III said, heard that in England, he said, well, if he did that, he's the greatest man in the world. So just that sense of service above self. I think if you look at my background, you know, I had degrees from Harvard or Yale. I volunteered to serve in the military. I served in Iraq and doing things that I didn't have to do. I made a lot less money, but I believe in this country, and I believe wearing the uniform is honorable. So that ethic combined with kind of how Reagan really was aspirational about, because people were saying the same things about America in the 70s, that we were bad, we couldn't do it, we were in decline, and Reagan said no, and he got us on a great run for a while. And I think we've stubbed our toe the last couple decades as a country, but we had 20 plus years of being a really strong country thanks to his leadership.
Yeah, he was a different animal, the way he did things, personality was. You ever seen Nixon's movie with Anthony Hopkins?
No.
You've never seen it?
No.
Highly recommend you watching this. 3.5. First of all, Anthony Hopkins, one of the best. It's a 1995 movie, and Kissinger's in there. If I was ever running, I would love to have that movie, to watch that movie. Of course, I'm sure you've read plenty of the books, but that movie's got so many different things to say. That guy reminds me of this guy from this season. That guy, and I just watched it a few weeks ago. Highly recommend watching this movie, Nixon from 95. It's by Oliver Stone. A must watch. It'll reveal a lot about a lot of different people. Next topic here is Roe v. Wade, okay? So Supreme Court, 3, Trump flips, right? For you in Florida, this goes from being a purple state, it's about to be a blue state, you come in, you flip, you pick up 2, or I don't know how many you picked up. I think you picked up 1 or 2, right? It went from being a purple state to a red state, which you were kind of talking about earlier, right?
That's just because of the movement of the electorate in statewide races. Now in 22, we netted an extra 4 members of Congress that were Republican to send to Washington.
Right. So in regards to Roe v. Wade, you're watching this, red wave doesn't come. 2022. Okay. It's going to come. They're going to crush it. It's going to be McCarthy's not going to need Gates. He's not going to need MAGA. He's not going to need any of that stuff. And then numbers come out from Pew Research, you know, 61% of Americans, abortion, all this stuff. And I think in April of a year ago or 2 years ago, it was 15 weeks. And then you come out April of this year, I want to say it's 6 weeks. What was your reasoning for wanting to go further right than Trump on that policy?
Well, it had nothing to do with Donald Trump. I mean, it was a question of when are you going to protect life? And the 6 weeks is to mark when there is a detectable heartbeat for the unborn child. So separate heartbeat, separate DNA, you know, that's a life that deserves to be protected. And so the legislature was able to enact protections. Now, they did have exceptions for all the things that people have asked for and that the Democrats have attacked on. But at the end of the day, it's a strong protections for life. And it's something that I've always believed in. You know, you can sit there and talk about the midterms. They ran $30 million in ads against me on this issue. They ran against the Iowa governor, Georgia governor, Ohio governor. We all won mm-hmm. overwhelmingly in that. Texas governor won overwhelmingly. So, you know, I don't think that was the reason necessarily that we didn't do as well. It may have been part of it in some of those races, but I think there were other factors. And I think Florida clearly showed that that you could get the job done even in the face of those attacks.
Yeah, I wonder, because it is look, if you're either pro-life or you're pro-choice, right? I'm a Christian, so you know where I stand, you know, when it comes down to our family. If I had, I'd have 20 kids. My wife would be pregnant every year for the next 20 years, but I'm not the one having the kids. I just wonder strategically, like when you're making moves like that, there's certain timing to making moves like that. Does that help? Does that hurt? Or that's the right thing to do?
You do
that's
what's right.
We're choosing
you do
to
what's
do.
Right and okay. You let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. And I'm curious to know what that's going to happen with you. Do you mind if I ask you a little bit about people getting to know you a little bit?
Sure.
Meaning, so when you work out, what kind of music you listen to? Like who is Governor Ron DeSantis working out to? Are you a Taylor Swift, Biggie, Tupac?
No,
are you
no.
like Creed? What do you listen to?
Mostly classic rock, and then sometimes I'll listen to different country riffs and country tracks. So usually one of those two.
Favorite decade for music?
Probably the 80s.
Yeah, me too. Favorite 80s song?
Oh my gosh. I mean, there's too many to list. It's funny. I was at an event the other day, and someone's like, hey, since you're Gen X, you know, what's Jenny's phone number? You know,
857-75309.
So I was able to do that. And he's like, yeah, I knew you grew up in the 80s as a result of that. So yeah, there's a lot of good stuff back then.
You know, you and I are 4 weeks apart, by the way.
Really?
You're a Virgo, I'm a Libra. I was born 4 weeks after you. Favorite documentary of all time? Okay, let's do it. Is it Wedding Crashers, Hangover, Step Brothers, or Forgetting Sarah Marshall? What's your favorite?
I mean, of those
documentary,
I'd probably say Wedding Crasher.
Wedding Crasher.
Yeah.
How many times have you watched Wedding Crasher?
You know, probably once or twice. Okay. But I mean, it was good back in the day. That's got to be 20 years old.
Oh
right?
My gosh, Vince Vaughn, one of a kind.
You know, Vince Vaughn was at when I was a U.S. congressman, I had Daytona Speedway, so I would do the Daytona 500 every year. So Vince Vaughn was one of the celebrity guests 1 year, and they put everyone who was a marshal in a pace car. So it was me and my wife in one. Vince Vaughn was in another. I think they had a couple musicians, and I kind of forget who they were. They're notable. And so we're all going around. You do the first two laps to start the race. For whatever reason, our car zoomed ahead of the other pace car. So we're going around the track once, around the track twice. Then you pull in, you go into the infield, and you pull into this parking lot, and there's like a fence, and there's all these fans there that are waiting for the celebrities to come. So they all have their phones out. My wife and I get out. They see our faces, and immediately all their phones go right back into their pocket because no one knew who the heck we were. Then Vince came, and everyone's going crazy doing all this other stuff. So that was kind of the one time, you know, I was ever with him. But, you know, he's, I think politically, is not a lefty like a lot of the Hollywood people are.
No, he's not. He's like, one night, this is 20 years ago. I used to play at Hollywood Park Casino. I would play, poker. And one night I go there, my friend Fernando, who ended up being one of my groomsmen, he's from Ecuador. We go there and they say, hey, there's a main table. Look who's playing there. Who? John Favreau and Vince Vaughn and this other guy from Christmas Story, I don't know what the guy's name was. I went and played with these guys. By the way, Vince looked like he had just woken up. He got out of bed and he was doing that movie with Jennifer Aniston at the time. I don't know what the movie was called. We played poker till 5 o'clock. He's exactly the way he's one of the funniest guys out there. Sports team. Who's your favorite sports team?
Bucks, Tampa Bay Bucks.
Tampa Bay Bucks.
That's right. I grew up in the Tampa Bay area when they had the orange creamsicle uniforms.
Tampa Bay
I
Bucks.
Was there when the old old sombrero and how bad those teams were, and won a title 20 years ago, and then with Tom Brady a few years ago. So, yeah.
Favorite movie of all time?
Probably Rocky.
Which one?
Rocky 1.
First one?
I think so.
Underdog?
Yeah.
You relate to that?
A little bit.
Is that a little bit of your personality?
I think so. I mean, look, I think if you look at where I am now in life, where I started, very few people, they would have taken the under on any of the stuff I've done up to this point. But I do think that hard work and just, tension and getting the most out of your God-given ability, I still think in America that matters. May not matter as much as it should, and we need to make it matter more again.
Yeah.
But I do think that that's what makes this country great.
Why do you enjoy politics?
Oh, man.
Why do you enjoy this game? This is a weird game to like.
People sometimes ask me, why did you first run for office? And I usually, why did you run for Congress? And I'm like, momentary lapse in judgment. there's a lot of negative about it. I mean, look, I think in this business, you're able to do things to really have an impact on people's lives. I mean, I will still to this day have people come up to me who I do not know, give me a hug, start crying, and saying, you saved my business, or you saved my job, or you saved my kids' education. We brought people back from Israel. My wife and I were waiting at the tarmac, 271 people, 91 children on that flight, giving us big hugs. Thank you so much, all this stuff. So all the day-to-day stuff, the nonsense you deal with, ultimately it doesn't matter. And what matters is, what are you doing to help people and make life better? We've been able to probably have more of an impact on a greater number of people as governor than any governor has been able to in a long time. And that's making the most of it.
Governor DeSantis, how do you sell America? If you were to sell America to me, when I was at the first debate and the second debate, and I keep listening to so many about policies, 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 everybody's policies, policies. Okay, there's a percentage of America probably relates to the policies, right? But if one asked you, sell me and sell the American people why you think America is the greatest country in the world, what would you say?
Well, at our best, our country is one where it doesn't matter where you start, it doesn't matter your family lineage, that if you work hard, get the most of your God-given ability, if you believe in what this country's principles are, that you can do well. And that has not been true in other countries throughout human history. Wherever you're born, that pretty much limited or not your lot in life. If you had privileged birth, you had higher aspirations. If you didn't, you had lower. You have an open field and a fair chance for your industry and enterprise to ultimately flourish. We're losing that. That's one of the reasons why I'm running for president. But at our best, that's what we are.
I love it. Rob, can we put the link to the governor's website for anybody who can donate and to his campaign to do so? I've done that. My wife's done that. Our family's done that. And we've supported multiple people in this run. I think it's a very important run that we're having. You're a very formidable opponent that's going on here. The climate is strange. I would have loved to have seen you and Trump run in a different way where it was more unified, but every game changes, seasons change.
We'll see what happened there. Talk to him about that. I mean, that was kind of his.
So by the way, if he called for a meeting, would you go visit with him? If he called you and said, hey, let's you and I have a meeting and figure out a way to unify the Republican Party, would you go to Mar-a-Lago?
I mean, I'd take a phone call. I don't think I'd make a pilgrimage down there. But the reality is that that's obviously not the course he's choosing. And the question is what's the best foot forward for the country? It's ultimately not about him. It's ultimately not about me. It's about how do you get this country moving again? Who's the best vehicle for the Republican Party to put up to win and to deliver on all this stuff? And I'm running because I think I am. I think I'm the only guy running who can win the primary, the general, and actually deliver all these things over an 8-year period to where the country in January of 2033, after serving 2 terms, pass the baton off, hopefully to a worthy successor, I'll be able to tell the country, we restored the American dream. We secured the border. We strengthened our military, fended off the threat from China. Education, not indoctrination, parents' rights, no crime in the criminals aren't ruling the streets and the cities anymore, rein in the deep state and the bureaucracy, all those things, we've got to get them done, and I will do that.
I love it. Once again, respect you for coming out. You said you were going to come out. You did. I appreciate you so much. It means a lot to us. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Again, appreciate you for coming out.
Appreciate you. Thank you.
Take care, everybody.
Yep.
Bye-bye.